Good morning and welcome to this episode of the Full Press Raiders podcast. Well, the Raiders have a bye week, and by the time you listen to this on Monday, you will see that you will have enjoyed a Sunday of stress-free football. But to break down the Raiders to this point and kind of talk about where he sees them going the rest of the season, one of, if not the best content creator in Raider Nation, our guy, Ryan Holmes. Good morning, Ryan. How are you?
Good morning. Yeah, it's a calm Sunday with no game on the horizon for the Raiders. Just get to sit back and watch football today.
Now, just we hit on it last time, but since we're going to kind of do like a bye review and kind of so is it me or when you watch them play or even sidelines or in interviews, do you just seem like – do they appear like a freer, calmer squad?
Yeah, they do. They're playing a lot looser on both sides of the ball. They're just going out there and executing at a higher level than we've seen. And then we've seen them make some incremental changes to the offense that have proven to be positive. And, you know, it's almost in retrospect looking back, and I was a John Gruden fan, don't get me wrong, but, you know, it feels like that cloud's been lifted off of this team and all that pressure and constant scrutiny where he's yelling on the sidelines is gone. And it looks like the players have reacted positively to that and the way Rich Bisaccia is leading them.
Now, I want to talk about Bisaccia for a sec. Here's a guy who inherited a job that from his, you know, his former boss, you know, quits. And he has to deal with the headache of not only dealing with the drama surrounding that, but the uncertainty of the future. How do you think his temperament and personality have changed some of the culture early on?
Well, clearly he's come in and he's gotten the trust of all the players, and he got it quickly because this team could have went one of two directions going into that Denver game. We've talked about that, and clearly they've bought into whatever Rich is selling them. And I think it's more of a – you went from the authoritative dictator and John Gruden who had his hands in everything, the roster, trades, the draft, the offense, and now that's gone. That's been removed. And now you have Rich Bisaccia who's coming in, and it's almost like he's trying to be best friends with the players. Clearly, he's a player's coach. The players love him. For me, let's see how long he can sustain that. It's been 2 weeks. They've played Denver and Philadelphia, so not exactly the murderer's row in the NFL. But, you know, the players have bought in it, and that's what they needed to do. I'm curious to see if they can play this way and hold up over the remainder of the season. Because ultimately, that's what's going to decide Rich Bisaccia's fate, how this team finishes down the stretch of the season.
If they make the playoffs, just on paper, they make the playoffs, does he keep his job?
I'm not 100% sold. The answer is yes. I think if they make the playoffs, I'd say it's 75-25. I think a lot of it's going to depend on how they make the playoffs, how they play down the stretch. Do they get to 11 or 12 wins, or do they back in at, you know, 9-8 or something like that? And then how do they perform in the playoffs? Like, do they go out and is it a clunker like what happened against Houston a few years back, or do they go out, are they competitive? So I'm fully on board with what's happening right now in the present moment, but I'm not ready to rubber stamp playoffs and he keeps the job. I'm not there yet.
The one thing I will say to Bisaccia's credit is that they said that before the last game, and before the last couple of games, you see him still with A.J. Cole, the punter, warming up. And that's a guy who, you know, he still takes his job as a special teams coach very seriously. But I want to transition to Greg Olsen. Greg Olsen is now free of any type of overbearing oversight. What have you seen the difference in the last year's game? Like you said, granted, not the best competition, but it's still an NFL game. What have you seen from the offensive coordinator?
The biggest thing I've seen with Greg Olsen is he's able to mix it up, and there's diversity within the run game, which is something we didn't really see under Gruden. It was basically running the same three or four run plays from different looks, and now you're seeing some more wham lead that you saw this week, which was interesting to see. It's not just inside zone slice. Or weak zone or weak lead. There's actually diversity in the run game, which has helped the line. They've gone to a little bit more power. Now, I don't know if that's a Tom Cable input or if that's all Greg Olsen, but to me, the biggest thing in the passing game is they seem to have simplified it down a little bit. but he's moving guys around. You're not seeing Ruggs line up just in the trips bunch formation or in the slot. You're seeing him work on the backside of a 3-by-1 formation, and he's putting players in position to make plays. And then he's also setting teams up. So you'll see them run a formation like the Kenya Drake 2 weeks ago was perfect. First play of the drive, we're going to run the flat, you know, with the slant, and then we're going to come back and we're going to run, you know, it was almost like a wheel route with a post to kind of set up that linebacker. So you can see Greg Olsen playing mind games with the other team and doing things with purpose to come back to later in the game. And you didn't see a lot of that from Gruden. You know, he was good in spurts where he was creative. He's really good against man coverage when he can run some rub routes and he can come out in those bunch formations and kind of confuse the defense. But I like the diversity in the game plans we've seen. We've seen, you know, Carr go deep a lot, and then he came back last week, and they played a lot of cover four umbrella coverage behind him, and it was, we're going to take the intermediate short stuff if that's what the defense is going to give him. They weren't trying to force the ball down the field. So I think that Greg Olsen's been phenomenal for the 2 weeks calling plays, and the Raiders clearly have scored over 30 points in both games. Again, to me, it's, I want to see what happens. The Chiefs game is going to be a big measuring stick. Clearly, the Chiefs defense isn't very good, but the Raiders need to put up 30 points in that game. But how do they handle the three-week stretch with the Chiefs, the Cowboys, and the Bengals coming up? And back to Bisaccia real quick. I don't know enough about his game management down the stretch in close ball games, his decision-making, in the 4-minute, 2-minute drill at the end of games. We haven't seen that because the Raiders have been up big in the two games. So let's wait a little bit on the Rich Bisaccia talk until we see everything that a head coach needs to do.
True. I want to switch to Henry Ruggs. Now, Henry Ruggs, three things kind of stand out to my eye if you look at him, not just on film, but statistically. He is only 7 targets behind his entire target number for the entire year last year. But to this point, he has 17 more yards. Most important to me, he has 3 rushes. Thank you, God, for just the stop with the thinking that, you know, like running him out there on a running play is going to be much. And his hands look better. Like, he's caught the ball, to me, just my blind eye, is with a little more confidence, a little more surety. What have you seen from Ruggs to this point in year two?
The most notable difference is just the speed with which he's running his routes and being able to get in and out of breaks and route running overall that you didn't see last year. You'd see it in flashes, but it didn't show up every week on tape. Now, that could have been due to the knee injury, some lower body injuries he's had during the season. But now you're also seeing Greg Olsen incorporate different routes. He's not just running vertical routes and post routes. You're seeing stop routes on the outside. He had one last week against Philadelphia where Carr hit him, where their connection seems to be increasing and getting chemistry, where Carr let that ball go before Ruggs came out of his break. We saw a slant, the first slant in the history of Henry Ruggs on the Raiders in a year and a half. We saw a slant last week that we've been waiting for because that's what he did at Alabama. You're seeing him get him the ball quickly in space on those quick 5-yard out routes. So not just deploying him as a deep vertical threat and or a decoy, you're actually seeing him run those underneath routes now over the last couple of weeks that all Raider fans have been asking for. And the other thing you see with him is the physicality. For a guy that's 5'11", 185, 190 pounds, he plays much bigger than that. He's got really big hands. I think he measured 10 3/4 at the combine. He's got a 40-inch vertical leap. He can win the 50-50 balls, an undersized guy. But he plays much bigger than his frame. And I'm really glad that Greg Olsen is getting the ball to him early in games. We're not waiting till the third, fourth quarter to throw him a pass. You're seeing opening drives the last 2 weeks, a couple of targets straight to Henry Ruggs early. And just put the fear in the defensive back and make them play off coverage, and they're going to take the underneath stuff. They want to come up and press them. They're going to go over the top. So the creativity of moving him around, and the biggest thing to me is getting him on the backside of those 3-by-1 formations so he can work one-on-one in space. He's not working out of the bunch and just pulling coverage away from routes for the other guys underneath.
One of the axioms in football I can't stand is that, you know, saying a player wants it more. On the 50-50 balls, as you mentioned, Ruggs uses that physicality and that verticality to win, and you won't see too many guys a buck 95 on a good day winning those, and it shows to his determination as a player. However, we always gotta mix in a couple of concern points. For me, believe it or not, my main concern is Josh Jacobs at 23, and he doesn't seem like he's gonna be able to keep finishing seasons relatively unscathed. And it makes the Kenyon Drake signing that much more important. What do you think Jacobs can do to avoid the constant news, or is it just he's snake bit by this misfortune?
Yeah, this is the million-dollar question the Raiders are going to have to answer, because he's getting dinged up every week, it seems. It's not, you know, an injury every 6-7 weeks, and he fights through it for 2 weeks and he's healthy. It's ankle, it's toe, it's chest, it's shoulder, it's arm, it's you name it, he's been hurt. And to me, this is why running backs aren't valued as much in the draft. And it's not just Josh Jacobs. Look around the league. Every running back in the league is dinged up. Kareem Hunt's hurt. Nick Chubb's hurt. Barkley's hurt. McCaffrey's hurt. They're all hurt. So none of these guys make it through, you know, 5, 6, 7 weeks in a row anymore, let alone a 17-game season. So you have to have two backs. Now, the question is going to be when it's time to give him a contract extension. I think they'll pick up the fifth-year option. I don't see that being an issue because the number's not high for running backs. But can you pay him at the end of the contract? That's going to be interesting. The Kenyon Drake signing now is looking fabulous for the Raiders. After the first couple of weeks when Gruden wasn't using him much and he was kind of in the doghouse, it was suspicious. But moving forward, having him under contract next year, the number jumps to, I want to say, $8 million, but you can always work out an extension and lower that cap number if you want to keep him around for a couple more years. So the Raiders can worry about that next year. They're glad to have him right now because they need him. They need him in the passing game. He's really improved on the run game the last 2 weeks, schematically with some of the changes that Greg Olson's made. And we'll see if he can continue. I fully expect him to split the role with Jacobs going forward. They can't afford to have Jacobs get 20 carries and Drake touch the ball 4 or 5 times. It needs to be somewhere in the, you know, 12, 13 for Jacobs and 8 to 10 for Drake.
At this point, for the remainder of the season, do you think that the Raiders should view Josh Jacobs as a 12 to 15 touch a game guy?
Yeah, clearly somewhere around 15 is ideal. I don't think he needs to be the 20 to 25 touch a game guy if he can't stay healthy. Because they're going to need him. It's a 17-week season, and this team's in the playoff hunt, so there's a chance they could go into the playoffs. They need him healthy. So, yeah, I do think there may be weeks where the game plan is going to call for him to touch the ball 20 times, where there's other weeks it might be 8 to 10. So I think it's going to be opponent-specific, and we'll see what happens.
Now, switching to the offensive line, the Raiders are facing the Giants, the Chiefs, and the Bengals coming up. Now, the Chiefs' defense, we know, hasn't been great. But if you look at that Cincinnati pass rush and you look at some of the pass rush on the Giants, how concerned are you about the offensive line, specifically everybody from the center and to the right of the center?
So the right sideline. James had his best game of the week last week, best game of the season last week, but it was the first time this season the opponent didn't use a zero technique right on top of him. So they didn't put a defensive tackle lined up directly over him where he struggles because of the lack of strength, which I thought was interesting that Philadelphia didn't try that. So he was able to get to the second level on some of the running plays and just help out in pass protection. I don't think the Chiefs will do it. I think the Giants will try. They may put Dexter Lawrence right over the top of Andre James, and that could get ugly. They're going to need to help him. So the opponents with the big physical run-stuffing guys in the middle are going to give the Raiders problems. James, to me, again, it was 1 week. Let's see if he can do it against the Giants, and let's see if he can do it against the Bengals. I think he'll be okay against the Chiefs. Leatherwood's been fine inside. He actually looks much more comfortable as a guard. That's probably where he should have been from the get-go. They tried the tackle. I'm not going to say it was a complete failure, but clearly he was one of the worst tackles in the league, and he was making the transition from the left side to the right side. I believe they will try to mix him in as a tackle in the offseason and see if that's something in OTAs next year that he can go to, but I fully expect him to stay inside a guard for the rest of the season, and we'll see what happens at right tackle. Brandon Parker's been okay. He has snaps where he looks really good, and he has snaps where he looks really bad. It's basically been the Brandon Parker show since he's been on the Raiders. He's gotten better, I'll give him credit, but he's still kind of that, you know, serviceable backup where you're going to have to help him. You're going to have to chip every once in a while. A wide receiver, a tight end may need to stay in. The back definitely has to pay attention and see what happens. But that's every team in the league if you have to have a backup tackle. So I think he'll be okay. We may see a little bit of DJ Fluker depending on what kind of physical condition he's in on the practice squad. Hopefully he can get up this week and get some snaps. Maybe they rotate him, you know, a series each and just get him some playing time. And then the best man's going to win down the stretch. I could see DJ Fluker taking over the right tackle job in the next 3 to 4 weeks.
Now, whoever devised their schedule at the league, actually, if you look at it, did the Raiders somewhat a favor as far as cold weather games? They are their remaining road games left. Yes, they have two, one in Kansas City, one in Cleveland. They're back-to-back, but they also play at Dallas on Thanksgiving. They actually play at Indy. And the back half of the schedule is not really – it's not awful. It truly is not awful. Do you think that back-to-back between the Chiefs and Browns is going to be either for the division or playoff seeding?
Yes, clearly I think those two games are going to be very important. They're both AFC games. One's a divisional game. At this point, Cleveland doesn't look like they're going to win the AFC North. They're behind the Bengals and the Ravens. So this could be a tiebreaker situation where the Raiders and Browns end up tied for a playoff spot for a wild card. Clearly having that in the Raiders' back pocket would be advantageous. It's a cold weather game, as you mentioned. The Browns love to run the football. The Raiders' Achilles heel right now is stopping the run. So that could be a problem. The Raiders are going to have to get up early and just hope the weather's not a factor. You hope it's not grapple or whatever the situation was last year or snow or something like that, because they're going to need to get explosive plays in the passing game. And the same thing at Kansas City. I've been in Kansas City in early December. It's been 10 degrees before. So hopefully it's sunny in 10 degrees and it's not, you know, again, snow or anything like that. But those two games are important. I would circle the Bengals game as well. Early, before the season started, everyone thought that was a win. The Bengals defensive line is for real. I watched that game against Baltimore last week, and they get after the passes. The Raiders are going to have their hands full with the Bengals. And then they have a short week. They got to turn around and go on the road to Dallas, which is not going to be easy as well. So if the Raiders can go 2-1 in that three-game stretch, it's going to be important. If they go 1-2 in that three-game stretch, then now we really need to circle the Browns and the Chiefs later in the season, because those are must-wins at that point.
Agreed. When we come back from break, I want to discuss the defense side of the ball and where you kind of envision the rest of the season playing out. You are listening to the Full Press Raiders podcast on the FPC Radio Network. We are back with the Full Press Raiders podcast. Terrence Biggs, Ryan Holmes. Ryan, when we look at the defense and we look at the continuing, I guess, evolution of Max Crosby, years ago when he was still at Eastern Michigan, we interviewed him, and one of the things that he talked about was his ability to win with his hands. Now, looking forward, he also draws a ton of either uncalled or called holding penalties. Do you think that you can start penciling him in for not just this season, but if you had to project multiple double-digit sack seasons?
Yeah, I think he can get to the 10 to 12 range just based on his ability and his motor to stay active. And then he's got really good hands. He's shown that he can beat double teams. Now, you're still going to need a guy opposite him to help where they can't send two or three guys at him. And some interior pressure is going to help, but the pressure rate is there. I believe he leads the NFL in total pressures, and he's just missed on a couple sacks. I think he's at five now. He's clearly on pace this year for over 10. And it's going to be about staying healthy. Last year on this podcast, we talked about, is he a situational pass rusher? But we, at the time, we didn't know he had a broken hand and a torn labrum. So he's going to have to stay healthy, one. And if he does stay healthy, this is a guy that can be a terror off the edge for years to come.
How much of that credit do we give Rod Marinelli for Max? So did we know that, you know, Max Julian was just going to be this person?
Well, clearly no one thought he was. He went in the fourth round. So credit to the Raiders scouting staff for taking the leap and drafting him. And then he came out his rookie year and earned it. Now, this is tough when you're comparing the player that was playing it. And we don't know if the prior scheme, it was mostly Gunther. Then Marinelli came in. They had disagreements on what the defensive line responsibility should be. But now it seems like Marinelli and Bradley, their systems is meshed with, you know, get upfield and get after the quarterback. We'll stop the run. If they run it, we'll try it. But Bradley's clearly get after the quarterback. And if the running back comes by on the play, stop him. They want to get upfield. They want to create pressure. And that fits more into what Marinelli wants. So I think it was more, you know, Gunther's system. And it was more of a, you know, read and react kind of, you know, they wanted to stop the run first and foremost, where Bradley wants to stop the pass because he doesn't think teams are going to beat them just running the ball consistently. And clearly that's the way the NFL is being played out now. So I would think it's more, and Max obviously deserves credit. He's gotten sober. He has great football makeup, if you want to call it that. The guy's a tireless worker. And then, you know, he coming out, I thought he was kind of like Jared Allen, and he's kind of developing into that kind of player.
Now, when we stay along the defensive line, we look at Thomas, Jefferson, and Filon. Between them, I am just stunned to even think about this, but they have 25 pressures and 6.5 sacks. Are you as surprised as I am the fact that those guys in the interior are generating that kind of disruption?
I'm surprised that Filon and Thomas are, because Thomas didn't really rush the passer much when he was with the 49ers. He was more of a run stopper. Jefferson, I'm not. Jefferson's always been up there as for pressures amongst defensive tackles. He'd always finish around 4 or 5 sacks. He'd never been a 6, 7, 8 sack guy, but he's always gotten around the quarterback and affected the passing game. And clearly he's getting a lot of one-on-ones because he's going to have, they're doubling Crosby or working towards Ngakoue, depending on who else is on the line. Filon, for me, is an interesting one because I thought he played really well in the preseason. He played really well early in the season, and then he's kind of been hasn't played the last 2 weeks. If you look at the snap counts, and he was even inactive in Denver. So I don't know what's going on with him. Is there an injury going on we don't know about? Is he being slowly phased out? But I believe they're going to need him moving forward. At some point, he's going to be called to play again. Hopefully, he's as active as he was in that Chargers game. So we'll see. But those three guys, as far as sub-rushers, have been phenomenal, better than anything the Raiders have had in a long time.
Now, if we shift to the linebacker, Denzel Perryman, I am just still stunned that he has come in after coming to the team super late and posting an 81 tackles, which is honestly, to this point in his career, if you look at the last 7 years, the most tackles he's ever had. And he brings such a intensity to each hit. Like, he hits people like he means it. And one of the things that, if you look statistically, he has definitely lessened the number of missed tackles as far as the percentage of missed tackles. And what have you seen from 52 that gives you hope that this isn't just a catch lightning in a bottle?
Well, his instincts jump off film. When you turn the film on, you see Denzel Perryman showing up and beating linemen into holes on run plays. And he just has a feel for the run game that is tough to find. He understands concepts. He understands reads. He understands what the offense is trying to do. And clearly he studies a lot of film of the opponent. And then when he arrives with intent. The ball carrier goes down. They don't drag him for, you know, 2, 3, 4 yards. Like, when he makes contact, the runner goes down. It's almost like getting hit by Mike Tyson or Larry Holmes or one of those George Foreman, those big boxers. In the passing game, he's kind of been a liability. Teams have been going at him here the last couple of weeks, designing stuff to try to get him in coverage where he hasn't held up as much. But the Raiders need him on the field for passing downs. I could see a situation where when Nick Morrow comes back, and Nick Morrow takes over as one of the nickel linebackers and plays in coverage, it should help this defense. But this defense with Gus Bradley has is designed to funnel the ball back inside to the linebackers who should be making most of the tackles. And we're seeing that with Corey Littleton and with Denzel Perryman, especially in coverage. They want to throw the ball underneath and then rally and tackle. They don't want to get beat over the top. So the defense is basically being forced to throw the ball either in the flats or short within 5 yards of the line of scrimmage, and you're seeing those guys rally and tackle.
Now, when we come back from break, I want to discuss the secondary and kind of get a rapid-fire kind of question and answer about the rest of the Raiders season, but that's as we come back. You are listening to the Full Press Raiders podcast on the FPC Radio Network. We are back with the Full Press Raiders podcast. Terrence Biggs, Ryan Holmes. Ryan, the secondary. Casey Hayward is playing at a Pro Bowl level. Who do you think will step up and play the play on the other side that could give the Raiders that balance in the secondary, in the cornerback room, I should say?
Well, hopefully it's Trayvon Mullen. We don't know what his injury status is or when the Raiders can expect him back. Hopefully it's within the next 2 weeks. And I'm hoping they get him back for the Kansas City game. We'll see. If it's not Trayvon Mullen, my first inclination is it's still going to be Brandon Faison. I know they signed Desmond Trufant. He got in a little bit last week. Looked like he was running a little stiff on film. They didn't target him, but he didn't show the same kind of movement skills that Faison has, and he doesn't have that kind of length either. So I think the Raiders are okay using Faison out there. There are going to be weeks when he's going to get matched up against better receivers where he's actually going to show more in coverage, but he's played pretty well since he's come over. He's made tackles. He's held the edge in the run game. He's been physical receivers with pass breakups. He's got his hands on a couple of balls. So I'm going to say if it's not Trayvon Mullen, it's Brandon Faison.
And Faison's another case of the Raiders are bringing somebody late this season and paying dividends. It's almost as though I kind of want to see a full offseason of Mike Mayock at the helm. Do you believe that he's going to be here for the long haul now that there's less pressure on him?
Well, I'd say it's more Gus Bradley, because Gus Bradley's bringing these players in, not Mike Mayock. I know Mike Mayock's the GM, but I'm sure Gus Bradley is the one that's telling him, go get this player. As far as the long term, I would say at this point I'm leaning 70-30 yes, that Mayock will be here long term. I think if this team finishes how we think they're going to finish and they get to 10-11 wins and they either threaten or make the playoffs, I would expect Mark Davis to give him a year or two just to see what he can do, whether that's with Rich Versace or not. I do think that every week that goes by and the Raiders win, that Mike Mayock will be here long term.
Now, another bright spot has been the player Trayvon Mehring. Folks shouldn't be surprised, but opponents have only completed about 54% of their passing when they target him. What do you think the rest of the season will look for the combination of Mehring and Abram as far as being safeties and as far as playing the Chiefs twice, playing the Cowboys? How do you think they will hold up?
Yeah, I think the test is coming for those guys because the Raiders last week basically played cover three the whole game. And it was like, Jalen Hurts isn't good enough to beat us, so we're just going to play our defense and make him out to execute us, which he couldn't do. They've had a stretch of quarterbacks here they've played that aren't the best in the league, so they haven't really had to vary their packages. The test is coming. It's Patrick Mahomes. It's Joe Burrow. It's Dak Prescott. They can't play cover three against those teams 80-90% of the time. They're going to have to play cover one. They're going to have to play cover four. They're going to have to play quarters. They're going to have to play cover five. Then we're really going to see Mehring when he's going to have to play man coverage and play different coverages and how are the Raiders going to disguise it. So I think moving forward, we're going to learn a lot in the next month about him, but he's shown tremendous flashes on tape that he can be a difference maker in the secondary and take away those deep balls, because the Raiders aren't getting beat over the top, and he's a big reason why. Abram as well, because right now Abram's in a comfort zone where he can play underneath as a hook curl defender, play the flat, and he's not having to really cover him on one-on-one. He's not having to play in the deep portion of the field, but he will. He's going to have to do that as they start playing these better teams and try to force them to throw the ball underneath, where the Raiders might play some cover six and cover four, as I said. So a lot of excitement through 7 weeks for those guys, but the Raiders haven't, other than Pittsburgh, the Raiders haven't really had to mix up their coverages against a veteran established quarterback.
What game remaining down the stretch do you think could be I hate using the word trap game, but could be trickier than what most people anticipate?
I've got two of them. The first one is next week against the Giants. The Raiders go into the bye, feeling great about themselves. They get a week off. Now we're going on the road, East Coast, 10 a.m., in a stadium the Raiders have gone into the last couple of years and everyone expected blowouts. They lost to the Jets. They got blown out by the Jets 2 years ago. They won on basically a go route because Greg Williams called a cover zero against the Jets last year. Something about that stadium, the Raiders just haven't played well there. I expect the Giants, they're going to come out. Saquon Barkley should be back. Galladay should be back. So it's going to be a different team than they've had the last couple of weeks. Having said that, the Raiders should still win that game. But I don't think it's the layup that a lot of Raider fans think it's going to be. And surprisingly, the other game that kind of is concerning is the Washington football team game for me. They still have an elite defensive line. And the Raiders offensive line is just okay right now. They can run the football with Gibson. They have a playmaker in McLaurin on the outside. The quarterback can scramble around, which has given the Raiders fits. Jack Del Rio is going to want nothing more than to take down Mark Davis for the way that he was let go. The football team is going to come in to Allegiant Stadium and be fired up no matter what their record is in that game, and they could easily give the Raiders fits. So those are the two games. Surprisingly, I'm not going to say Kansas City or Cincinnati. It's the two games. The Raiders are the better team. They should win, but I have concerns about both of those games.
I look at the football team. Trust me, I also struggle with not calling them that, the other one, but I look at the football team, and like you said, the defense, not just Sweat and Young on the outside, I worry about Payne on the inside and Allen on the inside, because they can just win with four. And as good as serviceable, I should say, as the Raiders defense offense has, you know, blocked recently, this is probably a top two or three defensive line in the league. And if they manage to keep Carr upright during this game, I have faith, you know, them honestly making a decent playoff run. I truly do. Now, before the season, I know that we went, you know, with our picks, I said that Reds would win 7. They already have 5. I think you said 10.
10 and 7. Look, yeah.
Do you see them winning more than 10 now, or are you going to stick with 10?
The fan in me wants to go more. The realist in me wants to say 10, still a pretty good number. I'm going to say 11. I think they win one more game. I think they finish 11-6.
I can't find fault with that. This is strange to see a team that had to deal with so much off-field nonsense. Actually, early on, since off-field nonsense, they've played well. How can people interact with you on social media, and what do you have coming up this week?
They can hit me up on Twitter. It's at RHOLM22. This week, no film to break down. I'm kind of sad about that already. Usually that's my thing on Tuesday, but not going to have that opportunity this week. So trying to do a mailbag this week on my Twitter account. If people have questions, they can send it to me. Or if not, they can email me at lvraidersall22@gmail.com.
One of the best in the business, Ryan Holmes. Thank you so much for joining us on this episode of the Full Press Raiders Podcast.
Thank you.